marriage counselors are beginning to see that one of the greatest causes of teenage marriage and divorce is, guess who? Mother and dad. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. Say, do you realize that in 6 years' time, teenage spending jumped from $2 billion to $18 billion? I wish we could leave the statistics at that and just feel grateful for all the fresh young minds and bodies to help solve the 20th century problems. But we also must face the alarming fact that 15-year-old boys are currently committing more crime than just about any other age group, and teenage divorce rates are double that of the national average. Now, in our last broadcast, we introduced the subject of parents and the home. We learned that the attitude and happiness of the mother and father would have an immeasurable effect on the child. Today, we're going to continue searching for the place where young people get sidetracked and into their own personal involvement with unhappiness. And in particular, we want to find factors in the home which may lead to their difficulties. I'd like to mention something at this point which has been a real problem, and I've seen it over and over again. If there is anything in the world that young people notice, if there's anything they're sensitive to in parents and in the church, it is consistency. Young people like to see consistency. They don't want to be pulled this way and that way and to have several paths set before them. They like to know what's right and wrong. And they like for parents to draw the line for them and show them what's right and wrong so there'll be no frustrating uncertainty in their minds as to what to do. Parents must stick together when they deal with young people. First of all, in any manner of discipline, they should present a united front to those children. Anytime you find father and mother disagreeing before the child on matters of right and wrong, you find confusion and frustration. Any teenager who's normal will pit parent against parent when he finds that they're divided on some matter of discipline, and he'll take advantage of the disagreement. It will lead to nothing but sorrow. There must be a uniting on the part of the parents. If ever you need to disagree on any dealing with your children, go into another room and do it. Don't ever do it before them so that they see that division. Now, let's think about the development of those boys and girls. During their teenage period, young people should be free to develop their personality and their life. Now, let me explain what I mean here. I think that any child, when these seeds of truth are planted in his life early, is going to grow like a plant. I believe he'll grow in a natural, normal way. His personality will develop as God leads him little by little and step by step. But we're now faced in this old world of ours with a peculiar problem of parents trying to push their children into a premature maturity before they actually are ready for it. The leaders in educational circles today are greatly concerned about it. The educators are very much upset about this preoccupation that parents have for their children, trying to make them grow up into adults before they're ready to grow up. The result has been, in our society, that thousands and thousands of teenage marriages have taken place and then fallen apart very quickly. They have actually diagnosed the reason for all this, and I think they've diagnosed it correctly. They've discovered that parents are mostly responsible because they have pushed their children and pressed them and tried to make them take on adult ways before they were ready to take on adult ways. Children wanted to stay in their childhood while they were still children, but parents would not allow them to do so. The greatest tragedy of all is that those children are not prepared for life. They missed out on one whole phase of their development because their parents didn't leave them in that stage long enough to really mature in that particular stage. They were snatched from the cradle and rushed madly through the very period in which they should have been allowed to grow slowly. Now, you think that this may be just an idea of mine, but I believe you'll agree with me as we think deeper about it. Some time ago, I saw an article in the newspaper written by Dr. Margaret Mead, the world-famous sociologist, and this is what she said in the article. And by the way, the title of it was Pushed into Adulthood, Expert Says Children Are Cheated. And she wrote, "We are doing a very bad job today in not allowing our children to realize their full humanity. Instead of letting boys and girls go their separate ways in late childhood and adolescence, we're forcing them on each other, forcing them to practice not how to be individuals, but how to be spouses and parents, catapulting them into premature, half-baked adulthood before they have a chance to grow up as individuals." Parents are now almost equally engaged in pushing their children of both sexes into premature sex activities and early marriage, combined with pressure for an early safe career choice. I'm still reading now from the article. We are robbing both boys and girls of mankind's most precious possession, childhood. So we have made marriage the price of freedom for both boys and girls. Little girls, endowed by nature with as great a capacity for learning as the boys are, spend the precious years of childhood no longer playing with dolls, which was at least centered on later responsible maternity, but playing at sexual attractions. How to look and be like the kind of girl whom some boys will want to marry sometime soon. And this premature pushing of little girls into precocious sexuality is very easy to do. Little girls with mothers at home for models fall more easily into an adult female role than little boys whose fathers seem far more distant and more difficult to imitate. And that's the end of the statement by Margaret Mead. Well, she has a lot to say there, friends, and there's an awful lot of truth in what's been written. Mothers do this without realizing it. Both parents do it, in fact. Because society seems to be moving along in that direction, they feel that it must be all right. The children of today are not like the children were back in the days of 50 years ago. Of course, the times have changed, but children still need time to grow into individuals. And that time is the very period that parents are using to push their children, to throw them together, and to try to pair them off. They seem desperate, as though they'll never be able to find a husband or a wife, and so they've got to start the children experimenting with their courtship and premature coupling off very, very early. Well, I could say a lot more about this because I've had to deal with a lot of problems along this very same line. Some time ago, there was an article in the Reader's Digest entitled, Marriage is Not for Children. I hope all of you read it. It begins this way. It was a beautiful wedding. True, the bride was only 16 and the groom just 19, but they looked grown up as they stood there. She so radiant, he so tall and protecting. No one could foretell that less than a year later, this fine young man would say to this lovely girl, I wish you were dead because then I'd be free. Or that later the same day, she would slice her wrist. Yes, that's what happened to Clarissa and Ralph, two New York City youngsters whose few cases similar to it in my files, and it didn't happen in New York City. Their plight is tragic indeed, but perhaps even more shocking is a reason behind it. Clarissa and thousands of other high school-age youngsters are actually propelled to these pitiable situations by their own parents who don't realize what they're doing. And this is the real tragedy. Well, the writer goes on to say this, disastrous premature marriages such as this are now one of America's great social problems. According to the United States Bureau of Vital Statistics, more and more girls are marrying early. In many cases, the initial push comes from the parents. Well, friends, that's the end of the quotation, but it goes on to tell about parents who try to get their daughters to wear high-heeled shoes, to put on provocative clothes, even while they're still little 12- and 13-year-old children. Educators and psychologists explain these actions. And here's the way they explain it. Quote, what happens when dancing and kissing become kid stuff? Will newer thrills be sought at an appalling and tender age? And how much harm is done to a child's sense of personal worth when he's plunged into a social and sexual world at a time when he's least sure he can handle himself in it? All right, this writer gives a few suggestions at the end of the article as to what parents can do, especially concerning their little girls. They can take these positive steps while their girls are growing up. Number one, understand that early dating is dangerous, even if everybody else is doing it, and have the courage to take a firm stand against it. Number two, neither permit nor encourage a hectic social life for the 11 to 14-year-olds. Remember that the best advantage you can give a young girl is the ability to be self-reliant, and she can learn that only by having time to be alone and at peace just with and by herself. Number three, de-emphasize things that are too sophisticated for young girls. Four, when girls get together with boys, discourage the imitation of adults and encourage activities appropriate to their ages. Refuse to permit parties where the boys bring their own girls. Well, friends, that's sound advice, isn't it? But now look at number five. Make your daughter feel that it's great to be just what she is. A child who is unhappy in her age group looks forward to the next one where things may be better. As she grows, express your deep interest in what she's doing. Praise efforts and accomplishments warmly and often. And number six, make her home an attractive, inviting place. Make young girls marry early, many young girls marry early to escape from an unhappy home. And that's the end of the points. And that, friends, is very, very true. Now, it's something for us to think about as Christian parents. Now, this is not harsh, but it's simply abiding by the laws of our being. And we need to acknowledge these laws, friends, because they do exist, and they're certain and definite in their operation. We should be wise enough to abide by the rules, or else we'll be swept away and hurt in trying to break those rules. Are we brave enough or wise enough to do it? Are we willing to step in and take a firm hand and prevent the thing that will actually end up to our greatest remorse and unhappiness? If we're willing to come to grips with it today, the Lord will help in the saving of our precious young people. But if we're not wise enough to take the rules that God has laid down, then we can't expect anything except disaster. What does the Bible say? Train them up in the way they should go, and when they're old, they will not depart from it. What does that mean? Are we sure we're bringing them up in the way they should go? You know something, friends? I don't believe that any Christian parent can truly say that they brought up their children in the way they should go unless they provide the maximum of spiritual Christian influence in their life. Now, here's where a wonderful Christian education system comes into operation. This is the way to safeguard those young people and put them in an environment where the worldly things will not be able to reach in and mold them. If we've trained them properly in the home, and then if we're sure that that teacher's giving them the right thing, then we know we're bringing them up in the way they should go. But if I send my child 6 or 7 hours a day to sit and drink in the philosophy, the ideas, the ideals of a teacher who's not spiritual and who doesn't even have any love of the truth, how can I ever feel that I brought them up as they should be brought up? Well, how should they be brought up, friends? I'm trying to be logical here, and I don't want to be extreme in any way. And maybe that teacher's a fine teacher. I don't know. That's it. I don't know. But my children are too precious for me to be uncertain about what is flowing into their minds for 6 hours a day. Whatever a teacher is, whatever the principles of that teacher might be, it is being communicated to the child, whether it's a geography class, a spelling class, or an arithmetic class. Whatever that teacher is saying, whatever the teacher believes, that belief is going to be transmitted to the child in her teaching. And I tell you, one of the things I want to guard more than anything else is the teaching and principles that my child accepts as the way of life. And if somebody else who doesn't have the same principles that I have is taking my child and molding his mind and his thinking for 6 hours a day, when I don't even have that child for 30 minutes a day to put my thoughts into his head, how can I feel that I'm bringing him up as a child ought to be brought up? Well, that is a real question we need to think about as we think about the education of our children. Well, our time is gone for today. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.